Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I am here with the Sunshine State Seekers, the Florida Famous Hikers, Chris and Chelsea, or Chelsea and Chris.
Hello.
Howdy.
Oh man, so I am still feeling the good vibes from the adventure we had last week, and we do have an episode about that, but a lot of fun. That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, Canaveral's pretty awesome. Yeah. I'm glad we were able to show you all the sites in one action-packed day like that.
Yeah, it was a good one. I got an update, though. Our podcast is becoming like pretty notable as we finally have a confirmed family member that listens, my little sister, Claire. Shout out to her that she listens.
Still one up on us.
Yeah, I think to this date, none of our parents or anything have listened to it at all. one thing we did see around Canaveral was a lot of manatees. That was pretty exciting, which leads me into today's topic, because we're going to be talking about manatees. But we do have a very special guest that we are very excited about, who is a notable New York Times best-selling author, I would say a Florida treasure, and an environmental reporter, Craig Pittman.
Hey, y'all. How you doing?
Thanks for coming on. We're super excited.
Sure. I always worry when someone calls me a treasure, though. I think they're going to bury me.
Well, you know, I've read a number of Craig's books. And if you care about the environment, you got to be careful, because it's kind of like in the movie Matrix when they got the red pill or the blue pill. If you just want to keep going on and, you know, not worrying about, you know, reality, just take the blue one. But the red one, when I was reading some of these books and everything that goes on behind the scenes when it comes to our environment, it was just quite frightening. It kind of pans a little bit into the manatee story. But Craig, you were telling us about some of the history of it.
Yeah, I wrote my second book, Manatee Insanity. I wrote because manatee protection was the most controversial issue that I covered. And so I pitched that as a book. And it was fascinating to me to go into the history of manatees and manatee observations and that kind of stuff here in Florida. The first person to actually record seeing a manatee in the New World was Christopher Columbus, who wrote in his logbook that mermaids were not nearly as attractive as he had been led to believe. And then the law that was passed to protect manatees was in 1893. A guy named Fred Morse, who lived in Coconut Grove, sponsored a bill in the legislature to make it against the law to kill manatees. You had to pay a $500 fine and serve a year in jail if you got caught doing it. Because a lot of people back then, of course, you know, they'd see a manatee, they'd blow it out of the water because it was good food. They, you know, it tasted really good. So, but the scientists, even that at that early stage, were worried that there weren't as many manatees around as there used to be. So he thought there needed to be a protection for them. And then in the 1940s, that's when they first started seeing manatees with propeller scars on their backs from speedboats. And a guy named Joe Moore, a scientist with Everglades National Park, discovered he could document those scars on their back and use that to tell one manatee from the other. So it's sort of like having, you know, fingerprints that are carved out by razor blades. But they still use that method today. So it just that whole history, and it's fascinating to me that, you know, now the pictures of the manatees, the scar, they call it a scar catalog, is computerized, digitized, and everything like that. And then when they, you know, find a manatee that they don't recognize, they call the scar catalog, catalog up, and they're still using Joe Moore's method from the 1940s to tell one manatee from the other.
Wow. Yeah, I can say when we were at Canaveral this weekend, it was at the manatee lookout area at Holliver Canal, correct?
Yeah, and every one of them.
Everyone had notable scars.
Oh, yeah.
They're chunks taken out of their tail, all kinds of
things. It's amazing. They're amazingly resilient animals. They have incredible healing abilities, but it's terrible that they have to go through that too. And there's one scientist told me, he said there's some question whether being hit repeatedly by boats limits their ability to reproduce, and you know, it causes internal injuries. So even if they survive, you know, it may cripple them or cause them other problems as well. So
it's traumatizing.
Yeah, the stress it alone probably could hinder that.
Sure.
That is a good spot to look at them. The Manatee Lookout right at Hall Over Canal.
Yeah.
I've never really spent a lot of time there. And there were tons of people and tons of manatees.
There are a lot of places to see manatees around the state. One of my favorite is the Tampa Electric Company Manatee Viewing Center over in Apollo Beach. One January, it was not long after Christmas, the heater broke in our house. And, you know, so my kids are in here playing video games, but you see their breath coming out. And so I said, okay, this is crazy. Let's not stay here. You know, I don't have money to take you somewhere, but I know a place that's free and we can go. And so we drove around to Apollo Beach. It took about an hour to get there from St. Petersburg, but we got there and we get out of the van and there's 300 manatees gathered up in the manatee viewing area. And they're all huddled in the outfall for the power plant. And one of my kids said, "Dad, this is cooler than video games." That was a definite dad win. Yeah.
Anytime I have guests from out of town, that's something, if it's winter especially, that I like to take them to. For a moment, I worked in Japan and I had some coworkers from Japan come back here and they were so excited. We went to Blue Springs during a cold snap and I think there were 180 spotted that
day.
So it was a pretty cold day. I think it was in the 40s and they were just blown away.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing to see. Yeah.
I think Blue Springs gets more visitorship in the wintertime to see the manatees than they do in the summertime to actually swim in the springs, which is amazing.
I think you're right. And of course, Crystal River has an annual manatee festival in January where people come and celebrate and put on manatee t-shirts and go out and look, you know, go out in their boats to look at the manatees that are gathered up there.
Crystal River is one that I can think of that you can actually see them on aerial when you're looking at aerial
imagery. Yes.
And you can see all the little manatees. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Three Sister Springs is a real hot spot for that, especially.
One thing that was absolutely amazing to me that I did not know when I read your book was that Crystal River really was not pro manatee at first, that they were worried about these manatee protections coming into play and ruining their economy. Is that pretty much correct?
Yeah, they were known for their diving. So there were a couple of, there was a dive shop set up there, but that was it. And the guy who was the scientist, Woody Hartman, who was the first scientist to actually dive with the manatees and document their life underwater, went to Crystal River. He's diving, he's seeing all this stuff and writes it up for National Geographic. And Jacques Cousteau reads the National Geographic story and comes there to Crystal River to film and puts out a 1972 documentary called Forgotten Mermaids. And suddenly Crystal River's on the map. It's manatee central. People are coming there to see the manatees, you know, new dive shops open up. It's a big boost to their economy. But yeah, people were worried that protections for the manatees would mean that boats would have to slow down. And there's still that tension there today. Crystal River is still the only place where you're allowed to touch a manatee because they got grandfathered in when the Endangered Species Act passed. But there's a lot of controversy because some of the tour guides have been caught mistreating the manatees. You know, like they'll pull a baby manatee away from its mother to hold it up for people to take pictures of, things like that. So there are a lot of calls for the feds to clamp down on that kind of behavior. And the people who are pushing back against that are saying, well, you know, it doesn't hurt the manatees and everything's okay. So there's still a lot of controversy over it.
Interesting.
I'm actually surprised to hear that. We have Ryan and Chris and I have a guide friend, and I was telling him the other day that, yeah, he said there's an area you can touch them, but that can't be the case. because it's federally protected or whatever. But so I'm surprised to hear that you actually can. I did not know that.
I when I was working on the book, I actually went out there and took one of the tours, and you know, with the all the snorkel gear, and the guide took me out, and we went out to see the manatees. I'm such a terrible swimmer. I scared them all away. all but one. There was one that stuck around. So I actually got to swim up and touch that one. And it was like, are you done? Okay.
Was it whatever the managing federal bureau that manages that Three Sisters has videos on how to swim with the manatees that you can see online. You know, they have, you can't disturb them when they're doing this, that, or whatever. Mm-hmm.
So is Woody Hartman, the guy who did the first study where he actually swam with the manatees, the first time he decided to do this in Crystal River, he put on his snorkel gear, he jumps in the water, and suddenly discovers he's jumped into the middle of a mating herd.
No.
It's, which is like standing in front of a Volkswagen that's coming right for you, you know? he told me he came back out of the water like a missile. And seriously thought about never going back in because it scared him so bad. And he was trying to figure out, can I do my study using a glass bottom bucket or something like that? But finally he got over his fear and went back in the water, and we're all much, much richer as a result.
Yeah, that's dangerous. Cause that's what do you got? I don't know how much the average manatee weighs, but you got them. They're all just, you know.
Yeah. They're the size of a couch or bigger. So
in the water. So
yeah.
Well, yeah, that's so a little bit about how the manatee became kind of like the icon of Florida.
Well, as I mentioned, the Jacques Cousteau special really put Crystal River on the map. Mm-hmm. And people who were already coming to Florida for other things, they said, hey, let's go to Crystal River and see manatees. And manatees became sort of this tourist attraction. Not just in Crystal River, but in other places as well, because other places would see that, you know, the manatees in Crystal River are attracting people, and they'd say, hey, we have manatees too, come here. So, but only in Crystal River can you see a city hall with manatee statues in front of it. So that's kind of cool. But they became this sort of tourist attraction because people want to see the manatees, they want to swim with the manatees, they want to view them. And so there started to be places that would really build up their manatee attraction. And there was a guy named Walter Gresh in Atlanta who was a big fan of manatees, and he was a Fish and Wildlife Service official. And he saw they had come up with the very first list of potential endangered species for the endangered species list. And he said, well, you don't have manatees on the list. You need to put manatees on here. And so they did, and they added them, and manatees were on the very first endangered species list when it came out. And it was a Florida guy, Nat Reed from Jupiter, who helped draw up the Endangered Species Act and get that passed during the Nixon administration. And so manatees have been under federal protection ever since then, and their population's gone up and down, but they've had that legal protection ever since.
I found a little factoid earlier that, and I don't know if this has changed since, but in 2017, the U.S. changed the classification from endangered to threatened, and they're citing an increase in their population.
Yeah, the thing is, what got manatees on the endangered list wasn't the size of the population. It was the threats that they faced, that they were losing habitat to waterfront development, and that they were being hit by speeding boats, and also that they were threatened by water pollution, by, you know, poisons in the water. Those threats are still out there. They're still just as potent today as they were back then. And so a lot of the scientists who reviewed the Fish and Wildlife Service proposal to downlist manatees said, it doesn't fit. You can't do this. They're not, you shouldn't take them off the endangered list. But they did it anyway. And they said, well, we've done a computer model for the future that shows that no matter what happens, manatees will not go extinct. So therefore, they're technically not endangered. Of course, right after that, you know, we start having this big manatee die off. Mm-hmm. Where in Indian River Lagoon, which was a real hotbed for manatees, they've lost their seagrass because of toxic algae blooms fed by pollution. And manatees with no seagrass is like you and me with no food to eat. You know, you walk into Golden Corral and they give you an empty plate and say, this is all we got. You know? Yeah. So manatees have been starving to death for the past few years and their population has plummeted. There have been calls for the Fish and Wildlife Service to reconsider and put them back on the endangered list. But so far, they have not done that.
It seems like there's constant threats. There's the spring flows are down. The nutrient pollution is destroying their either food sources. You know, in a lot of the springs that we visit a lot, there's not submerged aquatic vegetation for them to feed on when they're there for that warm water. And it's very tragic all over.
Right.
One thing I got my fingers crossed is that maybe they'll remove the Rodman Dam because I think a decision has to be made on that soon. Doesn't seem favorable at this point, but that'll open up the Silver River and Silver Springs where, you know, a lot more can get to it.
That would be a huge benefit to the manatees. It really would.
Yeah. Historically, they were in Silver River all the time. And now that you've got that series of locks and it's not anywhere near the number that are dying in the lagoon, Indian Lagoon or anything like right. that, but after they get caught in the locks and they try to move them through or whatnot, but those also hurt the manatees.
Yeah.
Just not being able to get past them.
Gosh, if you ever see them in the wild, they're so lovable. I was doing a road trip and I stopped by Blue Springs and I swam up to the head spring, had my snorkel gear on, and I see probably about half a dozen people around the edge of the spring with their arms in the air. And I'm like, what is going on? There was a volunteer in a kayak, and I guess the two manatees just got released in the head spring. They're already used to humans, and they were coming up. Well, you know, I don't know if they want to be pet scratched, fed, something. And so the volunteer's like, we're going to close down the spring if you don't stand there with your hands in the air. So it looked like they were at gunpoint almost.
Did they wave them like they just didn't care? I think that's the key.
I mean, for a split second, those manatees, they got distracted. They all left. And then they see me and they come swimming towards me. But I decided I didn't want to be stuck there for, you know, 45 minutes. So I decided to exit as well. But yeah, they're so friendly, you know.
It can be. And, you know, for people who've never seen them before, it's especially startling. Someone who worked at Homosassa Springs State Park told me the story that they have some resident manatees that can't be released. They were injured. They've gone through rehab. They can't live in the wild anymore. So they're still here. So some elderly visitors came from, I think they were from England, and they were standing kind of on the edge looking down, and a manatee swam up, and these people had never seen a manatee before. And both of them, their mouth just dropped open and their teeth fell out. the water. And then a year later it happened again with a different couple.
I have an uncle who seems to have what he would probably consider the worst wildlife experiences, and I would consider pretty cool, but we for some reason I didn't think to tell him about the manatees, and we brought him to Blue Springs there, and one swam right up to him and knocked him flat on his butt. and he didn't know what it was. But unlike my dad, who probably would have gotten in trouble for getting too friendly with a manatee, he put his hands up in the air naturally and was like, what is going on? Like, you're doing the right thing. Just stay there. It's not going to kill you. You're all right. But he was not happy with his experience. He probably would have enjoyed it much more had we given him a heads up.
Probably. Well, I was out with this has been years ago, but I was out with a photographer. We were doing a story on Charlotte Harbor, and we were in a boat in Charlotte Harbor. The photographer was taking pictures. The woman who was our guide was with us, and the boat was just sitting still, and suddenly it lurched to the right and lurched to the left. And, you know, we were all like, what the heck? And then it turns out a manatee had surfaced right under the boat. Oh, and really? Yeah. And it kind of knocked us flying. So I feel for the boaters who are having the orcas attacking them, you know.
Yeah. Manatee pales by comparison.
Yeah.
In your book, you talked a lot about the battle that was going on for manatee protections. There was some that were concerned about their freedoms being stripped away, and then others that, you know, were more about protecting the manatee. And that seemed to go on, and there was a big, if I remember near the end, there was a big discussion about not delisting them, but
downlisting. The boating industry, their holy grail was to get them downlisted. The thing that the feds did in 2017, mm-hmm. they were trying to get the state to do that, thinking, well, if the state does it, then we'll get the feds to do it too. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Buffett, who actually formed the Save the Manatee Club with Bob Graham, back when Bob Graham was the governor, Jimmy Buffett played a concert in Tampa, and he lets it be known he'll meet with Charlie Crist, who's then the governor, backstage. And so Charlie Crist shows up in this very elegant suit and highly polished shoes and meets backstage with Jimmy Buffett, who's wearing, you know, jams and flip-flops and in a tropical shirt. And Buffett convinces him to tell the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission not to downlist manatees. And so, and then he says, and by the way, Governor, do you mind introducing me to the crowd, you know, to start the concert? And so Charlie introduces him and then goes back and tells all of his appointees on the Wildlife Commission, stop what you're doing. Don't do it.
That's right. They kept kicking the can down the road, kind of, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't stop it exactly, but they just didn't pursue it anymore. So it just mm-hmm. kind of hung there for a while.
And so years later, I guess, well, maybe 10 years later or so, they got downlisted by the feds.
By the feds. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, I was looking at the manatee death numbers. They've really increased dramatically since the numbers that were discussed, you know, in the 2000s,
yeah, I guess
due to red tide,
and then the blue green algae bloom have both really taken a toll on the population. In fact, things got so bad 2 years ago that the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission approved supplemental feeding. So, in other words, they have biologists who went out and they went to where you guys were. They went to Cape Canaveral. Mm-hmm. And set up a little area with PVC pipe and netting where manatees could come, and they would throw lettuce in the water for the manatees to consume. And that's never been tried before, not with manatees. It's been done with some Western species like elk and so forth. They've never done this with an aquatic species or marine mammal. It succeeded in that a lot of manatees came to take the supplemental feeding because they were hungry. And the astonishing thing to me is people from all around the world donated money to the Fish and Wildlife Foundation in order to pay for the lettuce. We taxpayers didn't foot the bill for the lettuce at all.
Really?
Yeah. So many people donated. So many people cared about manatees that they donated enough money for the lettuce. And so they did it that year. They did it last year as well. I'm thinking they're probably going to have to do it again this year, just because we've lost so many manatees. And the seagrass is coming back a little bit in the Indian River Lagoon, but it's not nearly to the point that they can go back to just subsisting on that.
Is there any measures that they're taking in that area to encourage like a growth of it, maybe nutrient pollution control or anything like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're trying to replant. They're doing a lot of supplemental planting. And they're working on trying to clean up the number of septic tanks that are over there, because an awful lot of the pollution's coming from septic tanks, and some of it's coming from, you know, regular sewers, and then some of it is coming from stormwater runoff from people over fertilizing their yards, and so the fertilizer runs in the water, and of course it fertilizes the growth of these algae. So
yeah,
it's a triple threat.
You know, the weed and feed usually is not best for your lawn. You don't need to water as much as. And it just harms the environment, costs more money to the homeowner. It's just not good for all things considered, I would imagine. But
a lot of local governments have realized this and have announced a ban on the sale of fertilizers during the summer months when we have rain. And the fertilizer industry has noticed this and persuaded the legislature to slip in a provision in the state budget for a 1 year study and during the, of these fertilizer bans, and during the ban, no new local governments can impose a fertilizer ban. So they've stopped it for a year. So, and it's crazy because they, you know, we've known for several years that this is effective, and now suddenly it's been stopped for a study on whether it's effective. So
that makes me wonder too, how much it's regulated. And I just know this from like a post from the Florida Springs Councils and things like that. They'll put a ban on it. But it seems to be more of a ban on use, and big box stores, maybe they're just outside of the area where the ban is, are still selling these fertilizers. Yeah. And people take it home and use them, even if they're in that zone, unfortunately.
Yeah, because a lot of them don't know. They just don't know. And so, you know, the more we can spread the word about it, the better.
Yeah, I guess it's easy in Florida to live in the suburbs, you know, commute to our jobs and then come home and not really interact with mm-hmm. environment around us. But if you look at some of the damage, the coral reefs, some of our protected species, you know, a lot of them are just at under 10% of their historic numbers, and we still are just going full speed ahead like they're a nuisance. Or
yeah,
it's very discouraging sometimes.
It can be. So, and I mean, bear in mind, you know, in defense of the idiots, I guess you'd say, we have 900 new people moving to Florida every day, and most of them have no idea what they've gotten themselves into. And so talk to your neighbors, tell them this stuff. Otherwise, they're probably not going to find out, you know.
That's a huge point.
Yeah, I think that's like the heart and soul of this podcast. We definitely want to show people how to enjoy Florida and sometimes how we indirectly impact it. Because when I bought my first home, I went out and bought the old weed and feed and dumped it
in
and ran it all around my yard and, you know, watered it. So I had no idea either. So
I did the same thing. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
That's a goal. When Chris and I started with our blog and everything and our social media platform, that was one of our goals, because a lot of people, they simply aren't, they're not trying to be malicious.
No.
They just don't know. And a lot of times groups who are against these things tend to really point fingers and shame. And that tends to make people defensive. So mm-hmm. I think more educated and saying, hey, we've all been there. There's been times in my lives where we've done things that we look back on in disgust. But had we been approached in an aggressive fashion, we might not have the mindset we do today.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So, I mean, so, you know, there are people trying to help the manatees and doing their best to help them. There are some folks who are not necessarily as helpful. And before we started recording, I mentioned about the there was a boating industry lobbyist who actually last year proposed that the way to help the poor dying manatees was to kill off more of them so there'd be enough food left for the survivors, which it's just amazing, just an amazing thing. And this person was apparently serious about their proposal. So
the old call the herd strategy, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's have a hunting season.
At the same time, look the other way when the sewage is leaking out of the plant.
Yeah.
Ooh, sorry about that.
Didn't need to do that again.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. So as we wrap up, is there any glimpse into the future or seeing where everything is headed as far as manatee conservation, the populations or anything like that?
The most hopeful thing, I think, is the number of people that donated money for the lettuce, because it shows that the public is on the side of the manatees. Whether the politicians are or not, I don't know. But there are plenty of people who care about them and care about making sure that they're still around for the next generation to see. And my general philosophy, and I base this on what happened on the first Earth Day, 10% of the American population turned out to protest pollution on the first Earth Day in 1970. And as a result, we got a whole raft of new environmental laws, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, et cetera. If the people lead, the leaders will follow.
I mean, that goes along the same lines that we've said before, that just find something that interests you, something you really care about as far as preservation, and every person that adds to this is another voice, and that's how things get changed. Because if everybody was just silent or thinks maybe somebody else will take care of it, then the politicians, developers, whatnot, they're going to do whatever they want.
Yep.
Well, Craig, thank you so much. It has been an honor to have you on our podcast. As always, everybody enjoy Florida responsibly.
Can we blazon that motto above the Capitol in Tallahassee? Right.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.